looking for dungeons. They can be a great source of resources, and we're going to need them soon. I will be leaving Devil's Crater with the next batch of scouts to learn the area around the crater and about our enemy. I want every beastkin and demon to know the terrain in and outside of the crater intimately. Alcau's eyes moved from the different generals in the room. Some of you might be wondering why I am saying this to you all. In the coming months, we are going to face many hardships. We must work together to know what one another is thinking, the various worries and issues of our people here. If we do not have enough food, then we will starve. If the army is not prepared, then we will die. We will survive together or die apart. Here in these coming months, we can hammer out a home for our future generations, or make it a pyre to the end of us all. The room was quiet, as hardened faces looked to Alcau, waiting and ready. He looked back at them, nodding as he saw a resilience in them that made him proud to sit at this table with them. Quest. Survival of the fittest. Together, the races of demon and beastkin have worked together, making a foothold in Devil's Crater. The Dark Lord who sends his demon horde, hardened by a long journey and countless fights, sends them unknowingly into your home. He wishes to use it to grow his forces stronger. Show him your newfound strength. Rise from the history books that you were cast into, and live. Requirements. Defeat the demon horde. Failure. Death. Rewards. 1,000,000 gold. To the Devil's Crater Treasury. A collective gasp went through the room as people broke out into excited murmurs. Alcau pushed the quest notification aside slowly, relieved. His eyes latched onto Efri as he saw his brother waiting to be called upon.
"What of the Stone Raiders?"
Efri asked. Alcau snorted, remembering his conversation with Josh. "They will fight. As long as we let them use Devil's Crater later on when they do raids in the surrounding area." "That's it?" Malkur asked. "That's it." Kala, sitting in for an absent Anna, let out a chuckle. "Something you would like to share?" Lazar asked, the edge that might have been in his voice before he had started training with the Beastkin, was now replaced with a dry humor, as he had come to call many of them friends. And learn from them. They were excited to get that deal. To them, Ashal is the final frontier. A land filled with the best loot, the greatest raids, and the biggest opponents. They live to fight. Not too unlike some people I know in this room. But unlike us, they can come back time and time again. They live for battle to prove themselves. Of course they would want to fight the soulless demons. What self-respecting warrior wouldn't want to put themselves up against an entire army of creatures of power? They're excited to fight the soulless demons, and with our agreement, they get to be in the center of unknown and untamed lands of Ashal. Alcau pursed his lips. He had not yet met the leader of the Stone Raiders in person. Anna seemed to have a great confidence in him. The way she talked of them was as if they were her equals. He had seen her training in the battlegrounds. He had matched blades with her. Any force that she saw as her equal was a scary thing indeed. Alcau only needed to think of how their fight had gone. It had felt as if she were testing him, playing with him and testing him out. At no time did he feel that she was serious in it all. The one piece of advice that Anna gave me concerning them was to not piss them off, Kala said. Anna has always given me sound advice. Alcau met Kala's eyes and nodded. The big bear let out a hot breath and nodded. Well, we all have work to do, and winter will not wait for us. I say we get back to work. Alcau rose. The rest of the combined councils also rose. Alcau turned and made to leave the council chambers. His brothers followed him as he moved through the keep. First, he would protect his home and destroy the abominations made from his blood and the Xalur. Then, he would become strong enough to tear the Dark Lord and Lady of Light apart. Alcau's eyes flashed red as he pulled back his lips into a hungry smile.
Where the hell are those bastards?
Gimel looked to the other guild members. They were in the city Verdul. It had been a rather quiet place compared to most of the other cities that were located around the Perush Islands. They supplied food and clothes, and lived comfortably in the Gudalo kingdom that controlled the north of Gudalo. The south of Gudalo was held by orcs, gnomes, elves, human settlements, and dragons. The mountain range that linked the Grorart and Brokoj dwarven mountains served to divide the major groups. Verdul was an interesting place, but it hadn't been of that much interest until the Players' Guild called the Exdar's Traders set up shop. They had proceeded to put in massive orders for food and clothing, and all manner of industrial items that swarmed into the city or out of the newly formed factories that the mages and technicians of the Perush Islands ran. In return, they sold materials that no other player trading guild could meet in Perush, and few PoE trading guilds could compete with. The overarching Traders Guild had been called in a few times to review their practices as PoE traders saw competition and became scared. They had tried putting pressure on the Eggstars from every angle. They were not simply protected by hired guards through the Adventurers Guild. Their guards were Stone Raiders themselves. Although the Stone Raiders' main force had disappeared, the Eggstars traders had the largest group of them acting as guards. As the Eggstars traders' influence had grown, the merchants not competing with the Eggstars found business booming. Eggstars bought more than any other guild, while selling all manner of loot. The Mages Guild and College had become one of their largest buyers of gear and rare items.
"Boss, don't you think it would be a bad idea to call them out? Challenge them?" Penelope asked. "The last people who had a full-out fight with them were the PKP.
We aren't damned assassins, and we're not going to be challenging them to a fight in the streets or to the death.
We're challenging them with completing an A-class raid. If we can complete one faster than they can, then we can show everyone else that we're the best," Gimel said.
"I've only heard some rumors about the PKP. What happened with them?"
Jeremy looked up from his sausage and potatoes.
"They attacked the Stone Raiders in Selhai's capital. It was a bloodbath. They killed POEs and players alike, anyone they could. Heard that their leader, Havard, even became a champion of the Dark Lord."
Penelope shook her head.
"Anyway, the PKP had around 600 members in total. They brought around 500 into the city to take on the 150 or so Stone Raiders. The Stone Raiders were able to defend themselves and push the PKP back, but not before they placed a soul curse on them. Now, any member of the PKP who was there in Selhai Capital is marked, always burning from the inside by fire. Some say that there is a tracking spell imbued right into their soul. Doesn't really matter. What does is that right afterward, the Stone Raiders disappeared, after they were chased out by Selhai Capital's guard, the very people they fought beside and protected. While the main part of the guild is gone, there are Stone Raiders all over the place. Whenever they see a PKP who had been in Selhai, that PKP won't have long to wait until they get the white screen of death. Even leaving the guild isn't enough. It takes a full character reset, right back to zero, for you to remove the curse and get the Stone Raiders to leave you alone."
"So, wait, where are the PKP now?"
Jeremy asked.
"The guild was disbanded. If there are any people who didn't reset, I don't know. The Stone Raiders killed about 1,000 PKP every 2 weeks, sometimes killing the same players repeatedly, and even camping altars of rebirth. Sometimes, the Stone Raiders would just appear in cities with teleport pads to kill them before leaving again."
"Wow, that is one hell of a story,"
Jeremy snorted.
It ain't no story, Gimmel said, stone-faced.
How do you know? Jeremy asked.
I was there. When Fellox was just four parties, we were in Selhigh Capital for the monster hunt. When we saw how the magistrate ran them out of town, we left. The monsters numbered in the thousands that year. Biggest season they saw in 10 years. Many of the guilds and player groups left, not caring about the bounty. There was fighting on the wall that year.
Gimmel shook his head.
The Stone Raiders might have been at the peak, and all mysterious, but they were honorable rivals. I wouldn't fight them head on, though I would challenge them. From the few beers I've had with Josh, he'd seem he'd welcome it more than anything.
I hope they come back soon. I want to get back to raiding. I've been hearing that there are a few nice raiding spots down in South Gudalo,
Jeremy said with a pleased grin.
That's the spirit, Gimmel laughed and clapped Jeremy on the shoulder.
How are our creatures of power doing? The Dark Lord asked the bowing Boran Owl.
The demon horde continues to march across Ashal, growing stronger as they kill one another and the beasts that they find in their path. By the time they reach Devil's Crater, they will be the strongest fighting force in all of Emerilia, and they can hunt through the dungeons there to further increase their fighting abilities,
Bornal said into the floor.
The others?
The Lich Lords have been sent out, and the lower-leveled experiments. We have been having an issue. Our forces that were living in parts of the Aleph ruins that we located have been dying off. With the Aleph runes, we have been unable to view what is going on within their facilities.
They were wiped out centuries ago. We saw to that. Destroyed tens of their facilities. Killed their roommate master, Shard. What else could be down there?
The Dark Lord tapped his fingers against his throne.
It might be other beasts. The Dark is known to hold some of the highest level creatures.
Sweat rolled down Boran Owl's back. Well, they are just experiments. What of the portal guards?
Boran Owl, relieved, continued on.
The portal guards have been increased. The Dark Elves, champions, and creatures of power have done their best to keep the locations a secret.
Boran Owl hid his shiver as he felt his master's killing intent and hunger through his aura.
Good. Remind the Dark Elves to not fail me.
Yes, master,
Boran Owl said.
Your cultists might have died, but their sacrifice will serve to raise us to the top of the Pantheon and all of Emerilia.
You honor me, master. I only wish that I could assist in tearing apart those who dare think the other affinities as more powerful.
Boran Owl looked up, his purple eyes flashing in anger.
Soon enough, I will call on you. Prepare yourself.
Yes, master.
Boran Owl once again bowed his head. The sigil around him flashed with black energy, and shadows covered him. He disappeared from the Great Hall, and reappeared in his experiment hall. Thousands of altars covered the room. The smell of rot, decay, and blood filled the air. Boran Owl smiled, thinking of the damage that his creatures would wreak on the people of Emerilia. His purple eyes seemed to flicker and dance.
Those elven mages thought that I was weak, that I was a blight on their race for being of a higher affinity in dark magics. They did not understand the power of it.
Bornell's face twisted into an ugly smile.
I will show them the true power of the dark. I will rip down their homes. I will cast them out of their lands. I will kill their children their loved ones, and I will end the elven race from wood to high. I will watch them die, and when they have finally fallen to my hand, I will raise them as an army to kill their fellows.
Slightly crazed laughter left his lips. Dreams of death, pain, and servitude filled his mind. Chapter 5. Long Distance Conference.
Hey, Bob.
How's things? Dave asked, as Bob connected his mirror of communication. The two of them seemed to be sitting on Dave's porch back in Cliff Hill.
Not bad. I tried out those flasks you gave me a few months ago.
Bob looked out over the land surrounding Cliff Hill, sitting in his usual chair. How did it go? Dave looked to him.
It was interesting. If I was to use the contents and then destroy it before they made it all the way through my body, then it was like nothing happened. It was pulled from me. It was why I had you make the water ones, and I tested them out on a number of crops. I grew them and harvested them. If I destroyed the flask once they were harvested, then they dried up. It seems that only what is in the flask is destroyed when you destroy the flask. If you were to give it to a person and they drank it, they would be hydrated. When you break the flask and the contents have been drunk by someone, then at whatever stage the created elements are in, they start to decay rapidly. The protons and neutrons that make up the elements go haywire. They go through radioactive decay. A person would need a minor healing spell, and they would be okay, Bob said.
So once the power source is gone, then the glue that holds the conjured elements together dissipates, and they pass through millennia of radiation decay in minutes? Dave asked.
Yeah, though it happens so fast that the nuclear decay of the elements is minimal.
So it's not bad as long as they have a minor healing spell or some kind of potion to cleanse them of the effects of the rapid decay. Dave tapped his lip and thought.
Okay. So, good for crops, not so good for people.
Exactly. Instant water at a moment's notice, but only for the non-living.
Bob smiled. Now we just need to find a kind of crop that it would be okay for it to go dry on, Dave said.
Nuts,
Bob declared, pointing his finger in the air. What?
Nuts. Like peanuts, almonds, that sort of thing. They use a ton of water, but afterward, if you were to take the water out, add a bit of salt, you've just got nuts still,
Bob said with a big smile. So just grow a ton of nut plants with flask water? Worth a try. Dave nodded.
I gave it a go, and it worked fine for me.
Bob pulled out a bag of different nuts from his bag of holding. Dave took some.
Tastes fine to me.
Dave threw them back. So, how are things going for you?
Pretty boring right now. There's little for me to do but to see what happens. I played my hand, and now we wait to see where the chips might fall. In 2 or 3 months, the Demon Horde and the people at Devil's Crater will clash. In a couple of months, the tournament hosted by the dwarves will begin. After that, it won't be long until I have to start releasing the things I have locked up into events across Emerilia.
Bob frowned, his voice becoming serious.
These creatures are the kinds that would give an entire Jukal carrier trouble, and I'm going to be releasing hundreds of them onto Emerilia. I've tried talking to the Emperor, but he's rather interested in it all. I haven't even been allowed access to know what the Affinities Pantheon are making for their creatures of power, or who their champions are. I know that they have bolstered all of their ranks. Their divine mana wells are lower than I've ever seen them before. I don't know what they have planned. Dark had to have been growing this new demon horde ever since the last one was supposedly destroyed. They're not loyal, but they're easy to lead. And he's made it impossible for them to even think of rebelling against him. Damned walking mindless slaves, and they don't know it.
Bob sighed and shook his head.
Well, I was one of those until you showed me the truth, Dave said.
They lapsed into silence for a while.
Do you ever regret it?
Bob asked.
What?
Regret knowing that Earth was destroyed, and that Emerilia is real,
Bob asked, a worried expression on his face as he studied Dave. At times, yes, but not for the most part. I know what I am. I know why those things happened to me back on Earth. I've never felt more alive than I do right here. Sure, I built rockets and I sent people to Mars and around the solar system. I loved it. But here, I get to find out new things every day. I'm not scared of being left alone. I know my friends are really there for me. I'm happy with what I have. Sure, it's not as relaxing as I wanted it to be, but I wouldn't have traded it for anything.
Dave smiled.
Bob shook his head, a small smile on his lips. Dave's eyes looked out over the fields around Cliff Hill. Here, I am making a difference. It feels like this is where I am supposed to be. I want to tell the others about what is really going on, but I know I can't. What was done to us was wrong. I know it wasn't your fault. You were just trying to keep the human race alive in some small way. You didn't know we'd be turned into some mass entertainment with generation and generation killed off because the Empire deemed it fun? I don't know what the future holds, or what will happen by the end of it. Though I can tell you, I'm going to live it to the max and do what I want.
It's not going to be an easy path, Bob said.
No, it won't. But it'll be mine, and I'll do everything in my power to look after my friends and get rid of the Jukal Empire's control over our lives. Bob patted Dave's shoulder.
Shoot for the stars and maybe you'll hit the moon.
Someone's been reading up on their Earth quotes, Dave grinned.
Well, not much else to do other than just watch you lot run around. Ugh, it's so boring dealing with just the Pantheon. Only water and fire are any fun. Air is annoying as hell. Light's like the definition of Machiavellian. Earth is a dumbass. And dark is a conniving and powerful asshole.
Well, I have some people that you could talk to. Dave smiled.
Who?
You know that guy Sato? Well, him, as well as whoever else he connects us with. Also the dwarves. They need more help with information, and I know that you like helping them out. I was wondering if you might have a spare AI that I could hook up to them with information on different topics on Earth. You could also impersonate the AI and get in the middle of it. Dave smiled.
Playing on an old scientist's weakness for progress and curiosity,
Bob said in an accusatory tone.
Possibly. Hell yeah, I'll give it a go,
Bob smiled. Good, because I have a meeting with Sato right now and then another one with the dwarves right afterward. Dave's smile widened as Bob rolled his eyes.
So I'm going to have to step up an AI core in what?
Like 15 minutes?
Sounds like a challenge,
Bob laughed, some of the life coming back to him. Making plans and trying to give Emerilia a chance to survive was a tough job. Dave knew that Bob just wanted to be a scientist, learning new things and being at the heart of discoveries. Give him a challenge, and he'd excel. Give him friends, and nothing could hold him back.
You've got 10 more minutes, Dave said.
Damn it!
Bob disappeared from the Cliff Hill port simulation, a big smile plastered on his face. Sato started the recording device before he activated his mirror of communication. He arrived in a simple room with a fireplace at one end, flickering away with 2 comfortable chairs facing it.
Hey, Sato.
Dave already sat in one of the chairs and waved him over. Over the last couple of months, there seemed to have been a breakthrough every week as Edward's research division used the information gained from Dave and Shard. Living conditions had improved. New ships were being proposed. People who had been accepted into the leveling program were showing increases in every area. Some had even been able to create spells.
You look pretty tired. Sato sat down.
Tell me about it. Lots of work to do and not much time to do it. Need to be done within at least 2 months. I hope that we can make it in time. Dave looked into the fireplace. Edwards has a number of questions for Shard. Sato sent a file to Dave, who could forward it to Shard. And I have someone that I would like you to meet. Dave swiped his interface away. Who? Sato asked.
Me,
an odd voice said from Dave's side.
Got it done in 7 minutes. Suck it.
Sato looked over. His eyes went wide as he looked at a true Jukal, with its purple skin and patches of fur and frog-like appearance. The hell is this? Sato asked, ready to leave the conference at a moment's notice.
I am Lo-Cal, creator of the Trapped Mind Project. What you know as Amarillia.
The Jukal changed, turning into a gnome.
Also the guy who just stepped up an AI core in 7 minutes.
He buffed his nails on his jacket, looking pretty pleased with himself.
I also modified the planet Amarillia and created the Earth simulation. I believe it was time that we had a talk. Oh, and please call me Bob.
A chair seemed to rise out of the ground. Bob sat on it and faced Sato.
What the hell is this?
Sato looked to Dave. This is Lo-Cal, also known as the Gray God, Neutrality, and Bob. He made Amarillia to solve the issue of the aggressive species and keep humanity alive, at least in some form. As you know, it wasn't long after Amarillia was created that humanity started making strides in different kind of magical tech. The Jukal sucked this up and started watching Amarillia more. They started watching for entertainment. Millions of humans died as they continued to watch, getting Bob to reseed the planet twice. They stopped the players from killing off the aggressive species as they wanted us to have more people to fight, Dave said.
I did not realize how close I would become to those that I grew and placed across Amarillia. I no longer felt a connection with the Jukal. As my family died off, I was left here, never allowed to die. My one purpose, to run Amarillia, to entertain the Jukal Empire. What was supposed to be a way to preserve the greatness of the human race turned into a television show.
Bob shook his head. What do you want from us? Sato asked. Dave and Bob looked at each other. We don't want anything, dude, Dave said. You're enslaved on a planet that all of the players think is a game, with a pantheon that is playing power games with billions of Amarillians' lives, and an empire that uses it all for fun, Sato said, not believing the two of them for a minute. We've got our own issues, that's right, but we're not going to let that stop us, Dave said, as if it was just a minor concern.
See? I think this is why I came to be so enamored with you humans. No matter what, you don't quit. You always strive forward. Also, you're really argumentative, which leads to you making a lot of cool tech.
Bob grinned. So why are you giving us all this information, then? Sato asked. Seemed like the right thing to do. Dave shrugged. Sato rubbed his temples. So, you gave us all this advanced tech just because it seemed like the right thing to do, and you're not asking anything from us? Pretty much. And the stuff that you're figuring out right now is the kind of things that players get used to within the first couple of weeks being on the planet. Or 2 years for the people of Amarillia. Dave tilted his hand in a rough approximation. Sato kept his features straight as he took that in. What kind of stuff are they using if this is what they have within the first couple of weeks? Dave has said that he has been within Amarillia constantly for nearly a year and a half. So, why did you want us to meet? Sato asked. Well, Bob has all these plans and stuff, so I'm going to be busy for the next little while. I thought that between Bob and Shard, you would have most things covered. You know, he was Jukal at one point, so he knows how they think. where they are, and all that kind of information. Dave looked to Sato. Sato looked to Bob, his eyes thinning. Okay. Well, we are always interested in more information. We have our own means of verifying it, Sato said. The information they had already provided was useful. Even if Bob's information wasn't correct, at least they had it if they needed it. If it was, then Sato was not willing to lose it. That was how he had become vice commander of Daqual's military forces.
Sweet! This will be much more fun than hanging out with Denur or the Mer people. Dragons sleep a lot, and the Mer think of me as some all-powerful god. Getting really annoying. I should have kept a few of the beast kin and demons around. They were pretty fun.
Bob tapped his chin.
About time I had a vacation and started doing a few experiments.
Sato felt as though he had been left out of the conversation. So, what did you do before humanity was killed off? Sato asked.
I was a scientist. Worked with humanity a lot. I was able to use my position to make this system. I've always been fascinated by how creative you lot are.
Bob smiled, looking distant with a sad smile on his face. Sato shook his head. I would have thought this kind of thing impossible until a couple of months ago. Now I'm not so sure. Dave left Sato and Bob talking, skipping out and going to his second meeting that day. He entered the Dwarven Conference.
Dave!
Ah, shit. Dave turned around and headed for the entrance he'd appeared in.
You started this mess! You get your arse to this table!
Cole yelled from the conference table. Dave hung his head and turned around as he got mobbed by a dozen dwarves at the same time, all of them asking different questions about the metals and elements he had sort of introduced to the dwarves. Dave answered as many questions as possible. He had been joking about leaving as he started getting excited with all the ideas that the dwarves were coming up with. Some ideas inspired fear.
That will make a bomb. Shouldn't do that, Kelly, Dave said, as she explained a reaction she was working on.
How big of a bomb?
Dave stroked his beard and thought. I'm not sure, but I have some equations that you can use to figure that out.
I hate all this darned math. Used to be a time when you could just hammer metal into the right form.
Kelly shook her head.
You've got that high intelligence. It's about time you used it for something.
Cole slammed the hammer in his hand against the table.
All right, you delinquents. Sit your arses down and stop trying to touch Dave, you bunch of bearded perverts.
Cole really didn't like being the head of the council. There was a mass of grumbling, mostly from those around Dave as they moved to the conference table. Cole hit the table once again as everyone sat down.
Council in session. We've got more materials to divvy up.
Cole sent out messages through his interface.
That's done. We're also getting more shipments from the Stone Raiders with the rarer materials. Bob has been kind enough to lend us a hand in regards to the new information that we have. He has made a simple AI for us to talk to regarding our various questions on the new materials. Everyone meet Jeeves.
Cole waved to the side of the room. An unassuming man wearing a butler outfit appeared and bowed to the dwarves.
You can ask Jeeves whatever you need. He will do his best to gather information, formulas, and anything else you might need to know on the subjects you are studying. We are also running classes on magical coding. It's cheaper, easier, and shut up, Barry.
Barry crossed his arms, growling to himself.
Quino has also had some breakthroughs with magical coding. You want to tell them?
Cole asked.
Thanks, Cole. Okay. So as we know, if we have extremely complicated magical circuits on something, then we need a higher-classed material to contain that power. Same if we have two magical circuits operating as enchantments. With magical coding, we have been able to figure out how much power each metal can take. We're now working on different permutations of metals and densities,
Quino said proudly, knowing just how much power the magical coating could be on any given material would allow them to push the enchantments to the limit.
Didn't have to use all my damned newly forged swords,
Ender complained under his breath. Not that many paid attention. Edmer, his brother, looked rather pleased himself.
Okay, any other announcements? Cole asked.
Dave raised his hand and received a nod. Dave might have been one of the new Master Smiths, but his actions meant that everyone listened to him. The Exdar's traders and the Stone Raiders are working to become one guild. It will slow down delivery slightly, but we should be able to make up any difference. As the Exdars will have access to more funds, the greater buying power they'll hold, Dave said. More than one dwarf had an excited look on their faces. Dave had been refining multiple materials into different metals in the Aleph Forges, and then sending them out to the different Dwarven Mountains. Each Dwarven Mountain had a number of teleport pads, allowing them to take the material in any one mountain and then send it out to the rest. New refineries and processing facilities were being built in many mountains, so that they could convert the materials themselves.
Good. Even when the different facilities are up and running in the Dwarven lands, we're going to need other sources of the new materials. I know that the War Council is already asking for more information on the titanium barrels. After the fire test that Jessel did, they want more. We all know that soon we will be embroiled in a battle of one kind or another. Keep in mind the different applications of the materials.
Cole's covered eyes moved across the table.
Anything else?
No one seemed to have any good points, so Cole hit his hammer on the table.
Now get!
Cole gestured at the entrances and exits with his thumb. The dwarves grinned and laughed at his antics, taking their time in leaving.
Dave, a word!
The dwarves had their talks. Many moved to Jeeves, who multiplied into a dozen different avatars, ready to answer their questions. Dave moved off to a private conference room behind Cole. The door closed as Cole took a seat.
Well, when I taught you to be a Master Smith, I had no idea this was what you had in mind,
Cole said with a rare smile. Enjoying being the leader of the council? Dave grinned.
Pain in the arse, Cole muttered. Now, I wanted to talk about your smithy and the ceramics factory. Have you been reading the messages from me and Zell?
Yeah, I have. And there is a reason I am putting more money into the companies instead of taking it out, Dave said.
Boy, there is more coin there than I have seen outside of the Dwarven treasuries. And we pluck gold from the ground, Cole said.
I know, which is exactly why I don't need it. I just submitted another half dozen patents, and I'm making solid gold from those. I want the smithies and the ceramics factories to grow.
We're producing as fast as possible, and now building warehouses. The traders buy up as much as they can, but we're isolated.
Cole scratched his head. Not for long, Dave said.
Well, you going to tell me what your damned plan is, or am I going to have to drag you out of where you and your guild are holed up?
I want us to buy a teleport pad, Dave said. Cole was silent for a few moments.
You want to buy a teleport pad for Cliff Hill? Do you know how much that will cost?
Quite a bit, I know. It's why I haven't been taking any money from the companies or the patents. In a few weeks, we should have enough to buy one.
Damn, boy. You don't have simple plans, do you?
Think big or go home, Dave winked. Cole let out an amused grunt.
Well, Durin and Lux still talk about you and Dia all the time. They're going off on some dungeon raids with the Stone Raiders they've trained up. Could never keep them in one place for too long,
Cole laughed. They'll be fine. They could kick my ass any day, Dave laughed.
But you can come back from the dead. They can't. It makes things a lot harder, Cole said.
I know, but dying is not our aim. We'll be beside the best trained Stone Raiders. All of us have been working on our skills. The Stone Raiders might act like idiots when we're in town, but when we're on a raid, things change. Players always go first. If we die, we can come back. The people of Emerilia are some of our strongest fighters. They don't want to be a burden, so they train harder than anyone, which makes us players get off our asses and try to outdo them. Dave shook his head at his guild's ways. We really are a bunch of idiots.
Can say that again. I still remember a little incident with a certain guildmaster throwing weapons in my smithy, or a certain student turning decades-long practices on their heads, Cole said.
But Dave could see the corners of his old teacher's mouth lift up in amusement. Thanks, Cole, Dave said dryly. Cole chuckled.
Well, I've probably taken up enough of your time. What do you want us to do once we have the money for the teleport pad?
Place it somewhere in the town, with defenses around it. You never know when someone might get your codes and be able to come through the damn thing. Set up a power grid like the one that was around Boronal's Citadel. Charge the equivalent cost of soul gems, plus 5% for the time it's open per person. Get with Zell and figure that out. If you have any issues, send me a message and I'll see what I can do about sorting it out, Dave said.
Fine. Sounds straightforward enough. It will also open up a lot of places to sell our wares. Having a smithy that takes on applicants from across Amarillia and can repair the highest tier armor. Cliff Hill is going to expand just because of that. Zell was complaining about the clay and other materials he needs for different projects. Damn. I'm only just starting to realize how much this is going to change the two businesses.
Dave just smiled. Having the teleport pad to help out the two businesses was one reason. The other was so that he could get to the cedar whenever he wanted to. The dwarves and elves were reinforcing the area. If the Stone Raiders ever needed to retreat somewhere, then Cliff Hill was the place to do it.
Chapter 6. Moving Forward.
Shard looked over his people. When they had escaped Amarillia, they were being hunted down by creatures made by the Pantheon. Their numbers pitifully low, compared to their original strength. They were a group that had come together in adversity, even as they came back to their homes, feeling as if only hours had passed when it had really been centuries. They didn't let it play on their minds. Already they were working to pull together their cities. They brought new life to the growing areas and assisted the automatons Shard was using to continue the repairs done by the raiders. Alephir was a massive city. Party Zero had worked tirelessly to get the different power generators and stations online. The city was once again able to spin with that power. But the Aleph were rebuilding homes that had fallen apart, planting gardens, growing food, and returning the city to its former glory. It will take time, but once again the Aleph will rise. They were keeping their return a secret from the guild as they built up their strength. The Stone Raiders had helped them, but they didn't know them. There had been many cycles of players while they had been gone. Shard was interested in the various simulations he had run to see what might happen with the Stone Raiders and Aleph. It is my role to give the Council and my people choices of what to do. Shard had been an immature AI when they had all left. Now he was something of a guiding elder. The Council paid much more attention to what he said, instead of just thinking of him as a convenience. Hamdir looked away from the windows that overlooked Alephir, as more and more of their people returned from where the Grey God had kept them. Lights could be seen everywhere. Greenhouses were once again creating food, and factories were barely able to keep up with all the demands. The lights were back on. The factories were working non-stop, and Aleph walked through the streets once more. There was over 5 million people just in Alephir.
"Something on your mind?"
Ella Dorn walked up beside him, also looking out the window at their capital.
"Look at the consequence of our pride," Hamdir said. "We are but a fraction of our numbers, all because we were unable to ask for help. Or accept it from the Grey God, until too many had paid for that mistake.
It still feels unreal. Many people are going through their mourning, Decades gone in the blink of an eye, and we're left here,
Elladorn said, her voice heavy with loss.
We must look to the future, to what will come next. I have been thinking on the Stone Raiders.
What about them?
Elladorn asked as Shard arrived.
The meeting is beginning, Council members.
Thank you, Shard. Hamdir turned away from the window and headed into the council chambers.
All will be explained soon enough.
Elladorn frowned, clearly wanting to ask more, as they looked for their own seats in the council chamber. There were viewing balconies that looked down on the council. These seats were given to whoever wanted to attend. The council sat around an elegantly carved table, natural scenes engraved into its mixed metal surface.
The Aleph Council is called to session, Shard said, through unseen speakers, as the council sat as one.
Only Hamdir remained standing.
Over the last couple of months, we have come far. We have brought our city to life, and our people have been able to return. We are still weak compared to how we were before, but with time, we will regain our strength.
Hamdir was met with applause by the council and those watching the meeting.
Though we must remember the lessons of what drove us from our homes. We were powerful, mighty, and proud. We lived in a time of prejudice and came together to create a society that did not care of your creed or your station in life. We took in all. We educated. And we passed our knowledge on to those who were willing to work with us. We were proud of our society, and we had every right to be. The Affinities Pantheon itself felt threatened. When they issued their threats, we stood together against them.
The hall was silent as his gaze looked to them all, races from all walks of life, from an age long past.
We fought the forces of the Pantheon. We slowed them, and we declared that we would defeat them. Pride took us, and we fought a losing battle, even as we had been given another chance by the Grey God to escape the bloodshed. In the end, we took it. But taking that option was called the coward's choice. Pride blinded us. Made us call one another cowards for escaping with our lives. Our pride made us weak, to admit that we were not as strong as we believed. With our knowledge and our open displays to the other races and the way we shut ourselves in, accepting so very few, we taunted and played with those who might have allied with us. When the dwarves and elves, years before judgment was brought down on us, asked if we would like to work together to bring our races closer. We were brash and told them to worry about themselves. There were people all across Emerilia who wanted to work with us. Instead, we were too prideful. I hope that we do not make the same mistake. We have been given a second chance, a chance to return the Aleph to prominence. Will we once again shun those who wish to call us friends? Will we make walls when we could make roads?
Silence had seemed to descend over Alafir, the meeting being broadcasted across the city.
Shard protected our cities and homes as best he could in our absence. We owe him a debt of gratitude. Yet he had the wisdom to reach out to those who showed him friendship, who are right now fighting to reclaim our homes. You have all seen the videos of the Stone Raiders, seen as they charge forces that we could not fight with clear abandon. We are builders, creators, crafters, and I am proud of our achievements, but few of us are warriors. We created automatons to protect us, to care for us.
Hamdir stabbed the table in front of him as he talked, holding the eyes of the council and the eyes of those watching this moment.
It is only together that we might succeed or fail. We are not just the Aleph. We are the people of Emerilia.
We have shown our strength together. Think of the possibilities if we are to work together with others. I have seen the things we are capable of, and it brings a smile to my face. I hope that we as a race have matured enough to not shun those who have sacrificed so much in order to help us. I propose that we, the Aleph, extend our hand in friendship with the Stone Raiders, with the demons and beastkin, all of us saved by the Grey God, all of us working together to try to look after our people and secure a future for tomorrow, to see a new horizon with the suns of tomorrow shining upon us. Together, our four groups can build together. When we are ready, we can go out into Emerilia and hold our heads high, not with pride, but with our hands extended in friendship. Hamdir let the silence sit for a minute, feeling drained. His chest was tight with hope, as the stony faces of the council looked back at him. Hamdir didn't know who started it, but a single clap rang out. The faces of those in the balconies and those in the council's chamber broke out into smiles and nods of agreement. Clapping sounds of agreement and whistling rang out through the council chamber. Hamdir's eyes itched as he looked upon his people. They had come from the edge of oblivion and were now given another chance. The Aleph, demons, and beastkin had all defied the Affinities Pantheon. Supported by the efforts of the Stone Raiders, they had been able to return. Hamdir smiled and looked to his people, hiding his shaking hands. It took some time for the clapping to die down. "We call for a vote," Shard said. The council's interfaces appeared. They cast their votes, the room quiet. "The votes have been cast. By unanimous decision, we will send out an envoy to the Stone Raiders, then to the demons and beastkin, to discuss terms of an alliance." Shard's words were cut off as Hamdir sat back in his chair, the applause and cheering of the Aleph filling the city. They had taken their first step toward not only recovering their lost status, but carving out a new future for themselves. Chapter 7. Nearing the End. Josh sighed as he sat down at the mess hall table. "How's the forges going?" Josh asked Dave, who was shoveling food down his mouth. Dave gave him a dirty look before clearing his throat. "In the 6 months we've been here, I've got all of the damned forges going. Even modified a bunch of them to take the dwarves' materials and turn them into different metals. We're cranking out carbon fiber, titanium, aluminum, and a dozen other metals and materials. Thankfully, no one has noticed the movement of materials because of the drop pads and using the Exdar's traders. They part of the guild yet?" Dave looked to Josh.
They will be soon.
We're in talks with them," Susie said from down the table.
"Hey, Susie, you had a look over that teleport pad stuff for Cliff Hill?" Dave asked.
"Yeah? We should be good in a couple of weeks. Probably be a good idea for the Exdar's traders in Verdul to get one as well."
Susie shrugged.
"I feel like I'm missing something."
Josh looked between the two of them. They both had just shoveled food into their mouths.
"Dave is going to buy a teleport pad for his smithy and ceramics factory. They're going to be putting it right in the middle of Cliff Hill," Dia said.
"Ah,"
Josh said, as Dave downed half a glass of orange juice.
"Woohoo! That hit the spot. You guys ready to go mess with a mining facility?"
Steve looked at the others with a goofy smile on his face.
"You don't even eat food," Dave groaned.
Steve shrugged his massive shoulders, that goofy smile only growing.
"There's a group out there with a bunch of destruction staffs and melee types. They should be able to clear it up, and then the crafters there can get the machines moving,"
Dia said.
"All right, so what are you doing after breakfast?"
Dave leaned over, giving suggestions with his eyes.
Dia smiled and shook her head at his antics. We're going to do some extra training. Dave put on his best hurt puppy dog face. We're going to be working on how to actually shoot a bow.
What do you mean by that? Dave asked. The others seemed interested, too.
Well, I've been doing a bit of research into Earth's history. Have you ever noticed how in ancient drawings, no one had a quiver on their back? The damn things are annoying as hell. And, well, you're going to drop a ton of arrows. Here, we've got storage quivers that make sure we don't drop our arrows, though they're still not as good. So I went back to basics, and I've been trying something out. I'll show you down in the training area.
Dia smiled mischievously.
How is it you know how to get me to go along with your training every time?
Dave sighed.
Because you're curious as hell. And it is so good seeing you working out.
Dia winked as Josh choked on his breakfast.
Proper pair of horn dogs, them two, Susie commiserated.
Should we put in for that room change?
I kept on hearing noises through the walls last week, Dave asked Dia. Nah, we'll just have to be louder than them next time.
Dia gave Susie a wide smirk. Josh, who had been trying to clear his throat with orange juice, now had it fly out his nose. Susie turned an interesting shade of red.
Cold season is coming along.
Good idea to get your vitamin C in, Dave said to Josh, who was spluttering on the table.
Can we just go and shoot some targets, please? I don't think my sinuses can take much more of your innuendos, Josh said.
Dia pulled three arrows out from her hip quiver, holding them between the fingers in her hand. She had three targets at different ranges in front of her, all of them armored.
Okay, let's see this in action, Josh said.
A group of other archers had gathered.
Where did she get that quiver from?
One of them asked, confused.
Shut up and watch,
another chided. Dia had proved herself to be one hell of a bow woman, and they were all interested.
When I say go, Dave said.
Ready.
Dia eyed her targets and brought her first arrow to a string. Another arrow appeared in the quiver of holding.
Go!
Dia fired at the middle target, pulling a new arrow from the quiver near her left hand, hitting the right target and then the left.
0.2 seconds! Probably faster, Dave said,
as Dia looked at the three arrows that had put holes through the armor and the targets behind them. The third target fell over, as everyone gathered was silent.
Damn, where can we get quivers like that?
One of the other archers asked.
Most places. Just need to put the settings to one arrow at a time, and then get used to the forward weight, Dia said.
Makes a lot of sense. It's similar to the bow hand draw technique, where people would hold the arrows in their hand, pulling them back and onto the string. Here, you don't even need to hold them in your hand. Just pull them out of the quiver, draw them back onto the string, and release. Much, much faster.
Well, that just shut down the old firearms thing, Josh said to Dave.
Hell yeah.
Think of how fast a group of 10 archers can fire. All of them shooting arrows that could put a hole in an armored carrier back on Earth.
Dave shook his head.
Oi!
Steve slapped a troll with his axe, sending them into the wall.
Dickhead!
Thanks. Dwayne slammed his shield into another troll, throwing them back 10 feet, even though they were twice Dwayne's height.
Sounds like you've been fighting with Josh a bit.
Steve's left hand transformed into a bolt thrower. A dozen arrows took down the troll Dwayne had pushed back.
Hey! Kill Steel!
Dwayne grabbed a spear from his back and hurled it into an advancing troll. Steve's hand clicked back in place. A shield extended above and below his forearm, stopping a boulder that a troll had ripped out of the wall.
What? You're just slow. And Josh has good sayings.
Just have to be a bit faster,
Essa chimed in, agreeing with Steve, slapping away another boulder with her shield.
See? Nice block, Essa,
Steve said as Dwayne made annoyed noises.
Thanks, Steve,
Essa grinned as Dwayne sighed in frustration.
Sometimes I wonder about my friends.
Dwayne grunted as a troll punched his shield, letting out a howl as it shook its crushed hand. Dwayne didn't give the shocked troll time to recover,
as he shoved his claymore through the troll's ribs, turning and ripping it out. The troll dropped to the ground.
"Fiddly-dee potatoes," Steve said.